Hello and welcome to yet another in the podcast series on surrogacy. We are discussing disabled people and their journey into surrogacy in this episode. This is the fifth in the series. And I'm joined today by Danny, Tori and Mark. And we're going to discuss, firstly, what made them consider surrogacy, what challenges they may have faced as a disabled person coming into the world of surrogacy, and if there's been any misconceptions or stigmas they've encountered as a disabled person. So I'm just going to go around the room and just give everyone a chance to introduce themselves. Danny, can we start with you, please?
Yeah, of course, again. I'm Danny. I've got a spinal cord injury from an accident we had in 2018, and I'm unable to carry a baby because of that.
Thank you. Tori, can we go to you next, please?
Hiya, I'm Tori. I've got a neuromuscular condition. So even though I physically could carry a baby, it would be too dangerous for me to go through that. So that's why we're looking at surrogacy as an option for us.
And last but by no means least, if we can go to Mark, please.
Sure thing. Hello, everybody. My name is Mark. I use he and pronouns. I have a spinal cord injury. I'm a wheelchair user. My injury is in my neck at C6, C7. So it's been 25 years. Along with me and my partner, Matthew, surrogacy was the route that we decided to go down.
Thank you, guys, and welcome to all of you. So you've obviously shared a little bit about your reasoning into coming into surrogacy. I mean, what made you first, or what, I guess the probably the best question to start with is, what first brought surrogacy up onto your radar? Was it something that you just discovered in researching for yourselves, or was it maybe something that was advised to you by medical professionals? Mark, can we kick off with you, please?
Definitely. When Matthew and I first met and we started dating, we both knew quite early on that we wanted to start a family together as a gay couple. And we had known about, of course, adoption, which a lot of gay couples have done in the past. I did know about surrogacy, but more so sort of the American sort of version of a surrogacy. But we did a lot more research around what surrogacy was and the laws and so forth here in the UK. I had already had my sperm frozen at a clinic in London, at CRGH in London, and the doctor had called me and said, you know, you've had this sperm frozen for a long time now. It's probably time to do something with it. And I didn't think it was possible for a gay man or a gay couple to go down the route of surrogacy. And then when I found out about it, we did our research and, of course, came across the wonderful Surrogacy UK and was also then aware that there were other gay couples and gay single people that were also looking at that. So, and it felt like for us, we did look at adoption and had some conversations with some agencies and some local councils. Unfortunately, I didn't have a good response with one of the councils that I was looking into, and they basically said to me, how are you going to look after a baby? How can you be a parent? They're going to look at your disability and say no. So that wasn't very comforting to know that from that experience. But when we went down the surrogacy route, we were very much supported, I felt, a lot more. And Matthew and I, because I already had my sperm frozen as well, and with the clinic that we had, they were very supportive of us and said, yes, it is possible, and we're here to help you through that. So that's how it all began 4 years ago.
Wow, it sounds like a real roller coaster. You sort of, as you say, you kind of stumbled across, or did your research and found this world. And I think it's probably fair to say that it started as kind of an inclusive process and kind of a loss of the loneliness that, as you said, yes, gay men can become parents through surrogacy. You also encountered your fair share of naysayers as well. Mm. That's such a shame. What were your kind of initial thoughts? Because you said you found you'd heard primarily about the American surrogacy route first. How did you find the differences when you explored UK surrogacy?
Well, one thing that was, you know, one of our concerns was, of course, the cost. And knowing about the American version, I lived in America for 5 years, and knowing how expensive it was there, you know, obviously it's a very different system where you can pay somebody to have your child. Where here in the UK, and also we researched in Australia because I'm originally from Australia, you know, it, especially through Surrogacy UK, was very much about friendship first and building those relationships. And there, you know, it is illegal to get sort of financial gain from helping somebody have a family. And we just felt like it was more supportive and also a sort of healthier way of sort of going down, you know, planning our family. And yeah, and then once we understood more about it, and obviously being guided through Surrogacy UK sort of helped take some of the sort of the ease and the stress, but it definitely was a roller coaster ride.
No, that's great. Thanks, Mark. Tori, I saw you nodding along through a lot of what Mark was saying. Is that a journey that you can relate to?
Yeah, really, really similar to our journey. My husband and I started looking about 7 years ago about having a baby, starting our own family, and we spoke to a lot of my medical professionals and took in lots of advice, saw some fertility clinics, and they sort of said, you know, it's going to be such high risk for this to happen for you. It's your choice, we'll support you, but ultimately it is a massive risk. And my husband said to me, I want to have a family, but I want you in it. So at that point, we started to look at other options. And similar to Mark, we looked at adoption. I went through a few different companies, to the council, went to some open evenings, spoke to a lot of different people and sort of questioned them about my disability and how they would kind of react to, you know, taking on a sort of like a disabled parent. Because in my experience, you know, over the last 35 years, my needs have been met because I fought for everything I've ever needed and wanted. But in this instance, it was the child's needs that came first above mine. And ultimately, after applying to two different agencies, they said, no, we can support your application to be a parent just because I have carers coming in. So that was quite a big blow, to be honest. That was the first time in my life that I'd really kind of had like a negative response from some agency that was supposed to help and provide that all supportive environment. So my husband and I sort of like relaxed a little bit, took some time to come around to this idea of not having a family, and I couldn't settle with that. So I started looking at surrogacy laws and how it worked in the UK. But we actually have done a surrogacy, like independent journey before we found Surrogacy UK. Sadly, it wasn't successful with the treatment, which then led us to find Surrogacy UK. And it's just been every step of the way, just more and more supportive. I think, you know, having this great community around really does help.
That's really surprising to me, isn't it? I mean, it just hearing both of your stories, or, you know, certainly the start of your journeys there, that, you know, in a world where there is constantly progress in making things easier, I guess, for want of a better word, for disabled people, that suddenly you would fall short when it comes to possibly the most basic thing of just becoming a parent. Obviously, I use the term basic in terms of your want to just, you know, to have that right to start a family, and to be almost shut down quite quickly, it seemed, by some of these agencies.
One of the things that surprised me most is that, you know, if I was to become pregnant naturally, then these different agencies and support networks would have to act. Whereas because I took an adult responsible approach to it and kind of looked at all these different options and said, actually, you know what, this is going to require so much support, so much extra work for everybody involved. Like, I don't think this is safe for me. And because of that, I've kind of almost been penalised and not supported. So that's been a real eye-opener in this whole process so far.
Yeah, and it's shocking in the world of surrogacy that we do hear that kind of story time and time again, even for people without disabilities, is that it almost seems that because you can't, well, you said it yourself, you're being penalised because you can't start a family in the traditional sense. Whereas if you could, it would just be a free-for-all, I guess, for want of a better term, wouldn't it? You know, you could just do whatever you wanted to do. But as you say, to take the responsibility and to be adult about it and to be responsible and kind of go through these specific channels, I can only imagine that you do just get this sense that you're being told that, no, this is wrong and this is something that you mustn't do. Danny, how have you found that? I mean, has your journey been similar to what Mark and Tori were saying?
The beginning of our journeys is very different. The accident that we had in 2018, we lost our four-year-old daughter in the accident. So knowing, like, I am a mum already and I can parent is so frustrating for when we originally made our embryos at Boston Place, because of our situation and my disability, we not only have to have a consultation, but you have to have everyone has to have a wellness, the welfare of the child check. And then you have to have a consultation with a doctor because of my extra disability. I quote him, "How can you expect to be look after a baby when you yourself need 24 care?" I was completely gobsmacked with this, and I just said, "I can parent. I know I can parent. Just watch me." And like Tori said, I've taken the adult route of looking at it and realizing that, okay, I can't keep up with the physical demands of parenting. I know that, but with the support that I've got around me and becoming clear to the idea that I won't be able to do it alone, that we'll have a nanny in place to move to the physical side that I can't do, not to do it for me, but to assist me, that's all I need. And I just think it's something that gets, you kind of just want to go, yes, I am disabled, but I can do it. And I'm a very big lover of the saying, it's not what you can't do, it's what you can do. And I mean, we went to conference in 2022. That was difficult for me, and I found it difficult to relax. And then forward on to a year, I'd become clear within this community that we were in this space, that we were in the right place. And this year at conference, I let my hair down and I was myself. And I absolutely loved it. And we created bonds and friendships within this community. Now these people are members, they're friends. Each one's journey needs a balanced part to you as well. And I'm just grateful that there are people out there that can help people like us become families, become parents.
Absolutely. And so you spoke there a little bit, Danny. So how, I mean, I guess this goes for all of you guys, but we'll start with you, Danny. How did that, almost the being told what you can't do, you know, because you need this care, but as you say, you're surrounded by the support network, including your partners. I mean, how did that response make your partners feel?
Quite frankly, pretty useless. Dan was just like, well, you're not going at it alone, because by all means, if I was a single IP in my situation, not a chance. And I don't say this, I can do it, I can't do it. It's supposed, you can't physically do it alone. So Dan was like, well, I am here, we're not on our own, and we can do it. I know that I was a very good mum beforehand, obviously when I was fully able. I'm in a different situation now, but my husband was an absolutely amazing father, and he has still got his mobility. So there is no reason why he won't be an amazing father this time. And me and him together, this is a no-brainer. We're there.
Thanks, Danny. Mark, let's go over to you. So how has that made Matthew feel as well? Has Matthew got any disabilities?
No, Matthew doesn't have any physical disabilities. But we as any sort of partnership, we are very much equals and partners in this journey and in our relationship. And this is something that we have always wanted, and it's always been a dream of mine to be a father. I didn't think it was possible as a young gay man growing up, but it is possible, and now I have a son. But the one thing for Matthew and I is some of the things that we've experienced, because Matthew is non-disabled and he stands up and walks around and I wheel around in my manual chair. Everyone, which I'm sure my colleagues here also face, everyone puts their attention onto Matthew as if he is the sort of the lead, or if he was their biological father, not that it even matters, but I'm the biological father of our son, but everyone just assumed that he was. And also everyone assumes that Matthew does everything. And that's not the case. We do everything together. We share the responsibility of parenting, and our child is loved and is very, very happy. The things that for us were about, as a person with disability, you have to adapt. You have to find other possibilities, other solutions for things. And that's what we just had to put into place in regards to my disability and my needs, to then be the best parent that I could be for my son.
And I mean, we've said it already, but it is still shocking that in our modern world where, you know, there are so many aids to assist with disabled people, that there's still this narrow-minded viewpoint that, as you said, they aren't the lead parent, in air quotes, in that sense, or that they aren't capable of being the lead parent. That is just really surprising still, isn't it? Tori, how about for you? How did, you know, you said you had the same kind of thing as Mark, that, you know, there's a lot of people telling you what you couldn't do rather than trying to encourage what you could do. How did that make your partner feel, hearing those kind of things?
I mean, David is completely my rock, like, no doubt about it. I'll take it on the chin, and because I know he's there for me, and we are very much a team in this situation. You know, I think it's always a blow when anyone gets told, like, you can't do this, but especially when it's someone you like deeply care about, then it does hit hard. But David also knows that I don't really stand for no and that I will find my own way, and he's terrified of that, basically. So yeah, when we kind of came up with all these negative responses to adoption, even though we took some time apart, he was like, you're not going to let this lie, are you? I was like, absolutely not. And again, like Mark was saying, as a disabled person, you have to adapt, because the world isn't set out for us. We have so many limitations of what we can access in a physical way that we do have to find our own kind of path. And I think that's where we're brilliant, like problem solvers. So David kind of knows that I am the driving force in this. He supports me. He wants a family the same as I do, but we, you know, we're in it together, but he knows that it's not going to stop me just because I'm in a wheelchair.
I love that. It sounds like I'm joined today by three absolute warriors who will just absolutely not accept no for an answer when they've got their mindset to something.
I have a favourite saying that's, I may be the wheels that ride Danny and Dan, but Dan is the engine that drives us. And it's pretty much true, to be honest.
Brilliant. I love that. Which kind of segues us nicely into my next question, which, I mean, and again, because Tori, we were just hearing from you, elaborate on your partnership with your rock, as you put it. I mean, so aside from the physical, what has been the emotional impact of your surrogacy process thus far? I mean, obviously, sheer determination has been very clear.
Yeah, I mean, the whole process so far for us has been ups and downs, as I'm sure anyone able-bodied or disabled will tell you. Surrogacy isn't the easiest way to start a family. There are so many hiccups. And as I mentioned previously, we did try an indie journey first with a friend who offered to be our surrogate. Went through all the clinic appointments. We kind of were all ready to go. And then the clinic that we chose decided to suspend all surrogacy. So we had to find another clinic. But on top of this, like, emotion of, you know, it's in our grasp, we're nearly there. And then we had to find a new clinic. We also had to go along kind of all that side paperwork of, is it accessible? Can I get my wheelchair through the door? Do they have a lift? Will they allow me to kind of use their facilities? Like, have they now got to reapply to the HFEA? So not only do you have that emotion of an able-bodied person going through surrogacy, being so emotionally driven, you then have all the extra work of, does it suit me? Will it allow me to access these, you know, this clinic and this, like, you know, journey? So that's an added extra of the stresses of surrogacy.
Just when you're coming to grips with the emotional roller coaster that is a surrogacy journey, it sounds like there's just hurdle after hurdle to consider, isn't there? So
yeah.
Danny, how about for you with, obviously, because you mentioned that you had a four-year-old daughter prior to your accident. I mean, I can only imagine the emotional impact of that to then transition into surrogacy must have been an incredibly brave move on both the part of you and of Dan.
I mean, what Tori was saying about clinics and their accessibility and stuff, when we switched journey, of my eggs for embryos, because it's dangerous to collect my eggs, so we went through Autori to get some donor eggs. So we were told by Autori that our donor that they'd found, that the third clinic was at Boston Place. So we, of course, we're desperate to be parents. So yeah, whatever, we'll go wherever you want. We'll go to the moon. And Daniel went to do his sperm analysis. Of course, I wasn't required, so I didn't go. And he came back and he went, Okay, Danny, it's all upstairs and there's no lift. So we had to face the prospect of before we even started our journey, we would have to move our embryos. So you're hurdle number one when you're starting. And I mean the emotional side of it from men, I mean it's kind of like you just find a door and then it slams in front of you. And it's so frustrating. And then we have blooming COVID in the middle of all this. It's just for a spanner in the works for everyone. And we first came into the community in 2020 when we were in the full burst of COVID. And it just wow. I mean, this could still exist even though COVID shut everything else down. It did not fault this. Circus UK got stronger. We all sat in on Saturday nights and on Zoom calls, and we all learned how Zoom worked. And amazing that we can now do that, and there's no problem at all. It's the one good thing that's come out of COVID, I think.
Absolutely. As you say, just when you thought you'd encountered every hurdle that that non-accessible clinics and everything else could throw at you, and then you chuck a global pandemic into the mix as well. Yeah, I think we're all still reeling from that one, aren't we? Mark, how about for you in terms of the emotional journey you went on? Obviously, we covered a little bit at the start of your introduction into surrogacy and just the assumption that this possibly wouldn't be inclusive for you and for you and Matthew as gay men. How did you find the actual journey itself?
It was a wild journey, let's say, of lots of ups and downs, like most people that have gone on the surrogacy journey. Also, being a very sort of driven and at times impatient person, that was hard because it took time. Like when we first started, it was in 2018 when we first started talking to the doctor about going down this route and looking at getting donor eggs and. We decided to do that, and that sort of relatively happened quickly. And we decided between Matthew and I that we would use sort of 70% of my sperm and 30% of Matthew's, and with the donor eggs. And we got embryos, and they're amazing. We end up getting, I believe, it was like 13 embryos. So we're very, very lucky in that regard. And it was very exciting that sort of all happened relatively quickly. And then my sister, one Christmas, I went home with Matthew and back to Australia. And as a Christmas present, my sister gave us a card and said, "Here you go, open this." And we did. And my sister had said, "I would love to be your surrogate." And I just bawled in tears, big emotions. Oh my gosh, my sister's going to help us. But of course, my sister was in Australia and we were living in the UK. And then COVID hit. And that just was out the window. That wasn't going to happen. So then we had to look, okay, what other way can we do this? And then when we had to get counseling to make our embryos through our clinic, our counselor actually told us about Surrogacy UK and that she went through Surrogacy UK and found her surrogate that way. And we were also told about people through Facebook had done that as well. So we tried all of those things. We signed up to Surrogacy UK. And it took us actually about a year to become members of Surrogacy UK at the time. But then when Fancy finally did, it was great to then all of a sudden be a part of this community. So then we felt we were then sort of in a safe place, even though despite sort of the sort of feeling of heartache that it wasn't going to happen because of my sister, but now we had another avenue and that was sort of giving us hope. But then not wanting to get our hopes up too high because something can always happen. And then we didn't know how long it was going to take to find a surrogate. So we were worried and anxious about how does a surrogate choose you? Will someone like us? Will my disability be a deterrent? Will somebody not want us to do that because we are a disabled gay couple? So it sort of builds all these mixed emotions and fears also. But my mother always just said, say to us, "You know, it'll be worth it in the end. It'll be worth it in the end. The end of all this, you'll have a baby." And I'm like, "Yeah, but it's taken so long. Why is it taking so long?" But Matthew, you know, he's sort of the calm, chiller one. I'm sort of the artist, the passionate, you know, impulsive one. And we sort of balance each other out in that way. And when things got tough, and they get tough, and we don't think it was going to happen, and we didn't think we were going to have a surrogate, and then it did. And then through the online socials, due to COVID, which of course we were cursing COVID, but through COVID, our surrogate found us and we connected with each other. And then they offered us a GTK, get to know each other. And after 3 months, then we decided that we'd go as a team. And we did, Team Kilter Koala. And before we knew it, in December 17th last year, our son Jedediah was born.
So, as you mentioned, it's a real, real roller coaster of emotions. And, you know, you mentioned worry, anxiety, some fear in there, obviously impatience, and just kind of this overarching, almost self-restraint of hope that you have to put on yourselves as well to just kind of keep yourself grounded and not let this almost enthusiasm run away with you. Like, this is a possibility, but obviously on some level you have to maintain a shot of that to think, well, it could happen. It could, you know, it is a possibility. So it's just, yeah, as you say, the self-restraint that is required to not let your feelings of hope get too big. Yeah, as you say, it's just an emotional roller coaster. Well, as you've all said as well. And again, you know, what has been clear is that to have the support of a caring and, as you said, you know, a grounding partner. Tori mentioned her rock. You know, it is definitely definitely a big help, isn't it? Especially if they are the yin to your yang, and they are the one that can kind of talk you down from wherever you've allowed yourself to go from a mindset point of view as well. You obviously mentioned, you know, that I mean, you all mentioned at one point or other that you had to sort of change clinics due to accessibility issues and that kind of thing. And obviously we spoke earlier on in the podcast about how you were met with resistance to, you know, even wanting to dare to try and do this kind of thing in the first place. But once you made those changes, and obviously you did settle on your clinics, and they were the clinics you settled on for good reason. How did you find the healthcare providers moving forward? Danny, well, I think we'll start with you on that question if we can, please.
Well, at the moment, RMBR is still with Boston Blaze, but they're in transport in the coming months to Wessex in Southampton. And I couldn't be happier with Southampton. They've been supportive. They've got a very good surrogacy-related team. So there's a head of surrogacy. And it felt like going into a place of the unknown at Boston Blaze. So it was kind of like, oh, you're disabled. Oh, okay. Well, I'll see if we can do that. And I actually said, do you have anywhere that you can do the transfer in that's disabled access that I can get to in my wheelchair? And they said, no, we've got office space downstairs. I said, well, I was there at the conception of my daughter. I'm going to be there at the conception of our future child. I'm not going to miss transfer. So be it. I mean, we're very blessed that science is on our side with us and that we can do that. It's a blessing that we can. And again, like I said about those closed doors, yes, but they just seem to spring back open a little bit. And with the community that we've got, the friendship that I've made with certain people, and now we found our surrogate, Tracy, who actually wasn't a surrogate to start with. She met us through friends in Surrogacy UK. Then we continued our friendship, and then she decided that she would like to help us and become a surrogate for us. Wow, out of this world. But the friendship was there beforehand, and the friendships that we've got with the community is amazing. And I'm in awe of everyone in this community. I mean, I sound like a hippie, but I love you all.
So I think what you're saying is that, as you said, when doors are closed, you just have to allow other doors to open and just have more people in your circle with the yes, we can attitude rather than we don't think we can. Is that how you found it as well, Tori, with your with some of the healthcare professionals you've dealt with over your journey?
Yeah, I mean, I feel really fortunate in that the clinic we've signed up with have been really helpful, because I started saying earlier that we were with another clinic just before transfer. They said, actually, no, we're not doing surrogacy. So we moved all of our paperwork over to London Women's Clinic, and they just spoke to me really calmly because I was in a right state thinking I've lost my opportunity. You know, we had a friend who was going to be our surrogate and I didn't want to, you know, like mess her around as well, because it's not just mine and my husband's life, it's her life and her family and her, you know, we need to take everything into consideration. So when I was in full like marching mode at finding a new clinic, London Women's Clinic were brilliant, and they just said, yep, of course we can help you, tell us what you need and we'll support you, we'll find out how we can support you best. And we signed up with the Bristol Clinic, but they do the sort of medical side of it in Cardiff. Turned up the appointment, loads and loads of steps to the front door. So they said, no, come around the back, come around the bins, come and see me in the back, which we did. Sadly, it wasn't accessible because they'd had like a security door fitted, which meant the door was narrower. But they said, your next appointment, we will get you in. And to be fair to them, they did. And for our transfer that sadly wasn't successful, I was able to go to the clinic with my husband, with our surrogate, and attend just as anyone able-bodied would. However, they did say I wouldn't be able to attend the actual transfer because the clinic room had to be totally sterile and my wheelchair couldn't be fully sterilised. So they did say that's something that, you know, that we can't change. We can't go back on it because it does need to be sterile, completely sterile. And you know what? I was like, that's fine. I'm willing to take this because it's a step moving us forward. I'm going to have, hopefully, 1,001 firsts with a child that's going to be our family member. If I'm not there for the transfer, then that's just something I've got to take as a disabled person that I can't access. But actually, in the grand scheme of things, in the bigger picture, those 10 minutes are fine to miss. I was in the next room waiting as soon as she came out of transfer. And, you know, we had our own little, like, exciting moment together. So, yeah, I think that's just the realistic approach to, you know, having these access limitations.
You picked your battle on that one, I think, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And how about for you, Mark, leading up to the arrival of your son? I mean, obviously, you must have transitioned into the yes, we can attitude versus the no, we probably can't. Mm-hmm. As I say, I guess it all became successful in the end because Jebediah is here with us.
Yeah. And, you know, I just feel we were so fortunate and so lucky. You know, one of the wonderful things with being in SUK and in the community is you get to hear about other people's stories. So you really were aware of, you know, the positive and also the not so good things that happen. And you just never know how the journey is going to evolve. And for us, our clinic, as I said, in London, CIGH was amazing. They've got their own surrogacy team. It was all accessible, which is amazing, especially being in London. A lot of places aren't. They had an elevator. I was able to be there. I was there for the transfer. Matthew and I were there with our amazing surrogate Angel. And yeah, we got to experience the transfer, you know, in the same room with her. And there's no question or even anyone saying to me that I couldn't. So I felt very blessed by that. And once again, you know, 2 weeks after, we were so lucky for first transfer that she was pregnant. I mean, it was just amazing. Some of the sort of difficulties that we faced in regards with healthcare was more so then when we started getting our scans and things like that done. And even though I'd asked for it to be in the notes that this was a surrogacy journey, not everyone read the surrogacy journey. So sometimes we'd go to a scan and they would say, oh, only one person's meant to be allowed to be in the room. And I'm like, no, we're both going to be in the room. So, I mean, as a disabled person, we've always got to advocate for ourselves. So that hasn't stopped. But of course, I did hope with the information being there that it was a surrogacy journey, that people would read it and respect that. So we had to sort of assert ourselves in those situations to make sure that we were there and were able to be there in all of the scans. And once again, we're going to take no as an answer. So I would have just wheeled in anyway. But then when Jedediah was born, talk about roller coaster ride. I was in Australia and Jedediah was born a month early. So Matthew is there with Jedediah. I had to fly back from Australia. So emotionally it was just like, whoa, oh my gosh, so scary and overwhelming, but beautiful at the same time. But all the nurses, the midwives were amazing. They did know it was a surrogacy journey. They gave Matthew and I a room with Jedediah. When I flew in, they actually said, look, why don't you both have some sleep tonight and we'll feed Jedediah for the night so you can sort of be together. And that was amazing. But then when we got out of hospital, I remember I took him to one of his first appointments at a local GP, which you could get any doctor at this GP. And I went, my mother was here visiting to help, you know, with Jedediah and me. So my mother and I went. And there's a lot of assumptions that people make. And as you say, people, we, you know, we live that all the time in people's preconceived ideas. But this doctor at the time assumed that my mother was the parent and actually said to me, you can just stay there. You don't need to come in. And I had Jedediah in his capsule on my lap. And I just went, hell no, I'm going to be in that room. This is my son. This is my mother, and I'm going to be there. And I just barged through, and I said, look, I think you deserve to give me an apology for that. You assumed that I wasn't the father, and I am, and that I wasn't capable of being able to bring him into this room. So, you know, I wrote a letter to the clinic just to let them know that I wasn't happy so they could make changes and make sure they have notes so everyone knows that this is was a surrogacy journey that Matthew and I are his parents. So that was tough as well. But all in all, yeah, just so lucky and so grateful.
And it's, I mean, you've just mentioned it perfectly, you've encapsulated it perfectly there, is that it is all we can do moving forward as, you know, as individuals and as a collective organization, is just to continue to educate people and just bring their policies and their general outlook and attitudes towards surrogacy and evidently, you know, surrogacy journeys for disabled people as well. And just, just to educate them and just make them aware of what is possible, what other people are doing, you know, what other clinics are doing, and just to bring them up to speed and bring them up to date with everything that is current in the world of surrogacy, isn't it? I mean, we've spoken across the podcast about, you know, the hurdles that were presented and people's attitudes towards you all as disabled people. But I mean, I guess it would be logical to speak to you first, Mark, as a parent through surrogacy. But I mean, aside from everybody else's opinions and outlooks, were there any concerns about parenting that you had yourself and how your disability might influence that experience?
Great question. And I've thought about this question a lot. You know, I always feel like I can do things. I can do the things I want to do. It's just that I'm doing them differently than what, say, general society may expect the way that it is normally done. So for me, I'm not going to be a parent like somebody else that's not disabled, but parenting comes in all different shapes and sizes. And for me, it was about ensuring that I was able to have what I needed in regards to the support, not just friendship support, but adaptations and equipment. So then I was able to be independent and be independently looking after Jedediah. And so some things that we did was, you know, with his cot, well, the first thing that we had was the sort of next to me bed, and that worked perfectly. He was, you know, with me on my side of the bed, and I was able just to roll him onto me, feed him, and then roll him back. When he's now he's in his cot, I worked with a charity called the Men's Club and the Men's Shed Club, and I bought just a cheap IKEA cot. And then they raised it on stilts, so then I could wheel underneath it and then lift the side of it up. So then I would be able to get access to get him in and out of that. So it's just about being, as we said earlier, about being adaptable. And, you know, as disabled people, often we're faced with problems and we are problem solvers. And it's looking at, like, what are the solutions? Or what are the other tools that I may need to be able to do the best I can as a parent? And I know that people look at me and stare at me, but I'm used to that anyway. But when I've got my son and when I carry him, I've got this sort of like lap belt, which is amazing, that another disabled parent shared with me, which is amazing. And it's like a strap that goes around my waist and it then has a Velcro part that Jedediah sits in. And I have my arms free and he's there safe. He's all locked in. And we do everything there like that. We go shopping, we go have teas and coffees. And it's amazing. But, you know, it's just doing things differently. But in that difference is beauty.
Adaptable parenthood. I love that term. How about for you, Danny? Because obviously, as you said, you had prior experience of parenthood, and now your conceptions of parenthood to come, it will have to be adapted, and will have to change. I mean, I guess this must have been something that you've given a considerable amount of thought to. How about for you? What concerns do you have about how your disability might influence parenthood moving forward?
I mean, I made a few notes that things talk. My memory's terrible. So first of all, Tori was talking about your wheelchair not being sterile, and after being a sterile atmosphere, my husband, myself, our surrogate and her husband sat down a couple of weeks ago and we were discussing this, and I said, if unfortunately it would come to it that you were in a C-section situation, that's how I had my daughter. I realise, and my husband knows, that if our surrogate has to go through that, she's going to need her husband there. She's going to need her support. Also, it's for her safety and the baby's safety for it to be a sterile environment. I don't want my dirty wheels in there. I want them safe. So we both said that we will both not be, by choice, at the birth. We'll be in the room next door. Baby will be born. Tracy will know that the baby's safe, and the baby will come out and meet mum and dad. And that way, Tracy stays safe, baby stays safe, and Tracy's got her husband there to support her and give her what she needs. That's obviously at birth. I mean, going forwards, Darcy was a little firecracker, and the biggest fear that I have now, it's because I know with the two-year-old, when they're just starting to toddle off, there's a road, they want to run, they want to go. But when you're able-bodied, you can grab that hand and stop them. That worries me that I can't do that. And I've just started up recently, the last couple of weeks, on the Hub, a Parenting Act site. So it's little things that we could put those fears in there. And the Parenting Acts that people have already solved them, you can borrow them and you can share your experiences and talk about your fears, and all of a sudden they don't become as scary.
Yeah, as Mark's already touched upon, it's one of these where the sharing of information, as you said, you won't be the first person to have had that fear, and you won't be the first person to have had to adapt to that fear either, will you? Yeah, that's really thought-provoking, in my opinion. How about for you, Tori? Have you had any concerns about how parenting might be affected by your disability?
Yeah, so when we started kind of our surrogacy and adoption, well, mostly surrogacy journey, I went a bit mad and just started listing everything that I might struggle with and just find solutions for it. Because if I know I found a solution, I know I can manage. I know I can find my own way of bringing up a child. So it's something that David and I have like taken a lot of time over, and during our like indie journey that I was explaining earlier, I also spoke to the local council and I spoke to lots of different avenues of like accessible equipment, just to say, this is what I'm planning to do, this is what I'd like to achieve, I'd like to be a parent, I'm giving you as much notice as possible. Yes, it might not be successful, but 9 months pregnancy is not long enough time for me to get those kind of like foundations in place. So I have 24-hour care, and I explained to the council that, you know, if we were fortunate enough to have a baby, it might be that I need some additional care just in a transitional time when we're becoming parents, and my body's learning what it's got to do, the baby's learning what it's got to do, and I need to be able to not only support me, support the baby, and support my care team. So I had a meeting with them and said, you know, it is a tricky subject, because no, I don't have a baby in front of me right now, but I can't leave it to chance. I need to know that if we were lucky enough to have a family, this support network is ready to move fast. And so I've already had the agreement funding, everything is in place. You know, I've spoken to a lot of disabled parents I know with my condition as well. So that's a really interesting way of like connecting with other mums and their specific limitations like mine and the equipment they use. So I've kind of done a lot of the background work of how I can kind of prepare myself as a disabled prospective parent. But also, we're really fortunate that we're in a get to know, soon to become a team, with a lovely surrogate and her family, but she's actually a midwife. So she is a fountain of knowledge. I love it. It's just, she's so thoughtful that the whole process, like, I've got the physical side for me sorted, and she's thinking about the birth and the pregnancy and how I can access that as well. Because obviously she works in the hospital, she's looked at access requirements that I might have there. She's checked the width of doorways. She's sort of mentioned, we're going to go into the surrogacy journey, and she's thinking about me and my access needs from the get-go, which I'm just so grateful for. I can't believe we're just so lucky to find such an amazing family.
Absolutely. A surrogate that's also a midwife. It sounds like you very much got the inside track there. But, going back to your discussions that you had with your counsel, off the back of what Mark was saying, it very much, again, it is just identifying the gaps in the policies and making sure that those gaps are being plugged, isn't it? Or, you know, that suitable changes are being made. And as you rightly said, no, you may not have a baby physically in front of you right now, but you need to prep for that, don't you?
Yeah, because a lot of the councils and the different avenues that we have to kind of seek help from, it's just, we just get passed around continually to different areas, different departments. No one wants to help when it comes to funding and when it's something that's not an easy road, something they've not experienced before. You just get so many walls put up against you. So I just said, I know that I might be jumping the gun and we might not be lucky enough to have a family, but I need to get it ready for just in case.
We've said it already. You need to invoke the yes, we can attitude rather than we probably can't. It's just really interesting. And as I said, I've used the phrase already, it's very thought provoking. There's just so many aspects that an able-bodied person, even on a surrogacy journey, wouldn't necessarily think of to be issues. And they, as you say, there's just wall after wall and hurdle after hurdle. And it's just commendable that, you know, how strong you've all been and the things that you've had to overcome and have overcome. And it's, you know, because of that, my last two questions for this podcast, they're double barreled questions. And I'm going to ask all of you to channel those inner warriors when it comes to answering this. Tori, I think we'll go with you first. So what would you say to those on social media who say you shouldn't use surrogacy as a pathway to parenthood?
So I have read that quite a lot, to be honest, on a lot of different forums. And all I can, this probably isn't the answer that you want, but I just ignore them because most of them are just ignorant to what disabled people can bring and can offer. It's just causing a lot of upset when you read these things about why shouldn't I be a mum just because I'm a wheelchair user and I've got a neuromuscular condition. So, yeah. Having a lot of people who aren't open to learning about disabled parents or, you know, different ways of raising a child, I think it's just easier to ignore them.
And so that brings us on to part two. What message would you like to send out to others in a similar situation?
I think the only thing I can say is you have to put yourself first and realise that you have that right. If that's what you desperately want in your life, then you definitely need to attempt it because you'll always regret it if you don't try.
Saw Mark nodding along to that there. So Mark, we'll let you go next. And just to forewarn you that while I am a parent, so ha is not a suitable answer to this, but what would you say to those on social media who say you shouldn't use surrogacy as a pathway to parenthood?
So I thought about this and actually wrote it down. So my initial response to that is, educate yourself. Don't be ignorant. Who gives you the right to judge and decide who can or who cannot use surrogacy as a pathway to parenthood? And I believe that everyone should have the opportunity to start a family if they want to, via what pathway that is suitable for them and their needs. And for us, that was surrogacy.
Very well said. And so therefore, is there anything you'd like to add to that as a message to others in a similar situation?
Take that leap of faith. You can do it. It's just about finding solutions and ensuring that your needs are there to be able to be the best parent that you can be. And it is the most amazing, rewarding experience being a parent.
This is fantastic. I didn't think my episode 5 of this podcast would be so inspirational, but it really has been thus far. Thank you. Danny, same question for you. So what would you say to those on social media? We've had, I feel like we've had both ends of the spectrum there with Torrey just ignoring people and Mark with that fantastic response. Where do you sit on what those people on social media have been saying about surrogacy as a pathway?
I did think about this beforehand, so I wrote down what I thought. It's all well and good if you can have children naturally and you can have them in a standard or what people like to call normal way. It's all well and good, but for those of us that can't have children like that, who are you to decide or take away my right to be a parent? I know I can parent, and any other disabled person can parent. Maybe not in the same way that others could parent, but their own way, and we'll all find our own way. Like Tori said, we are problem solvers. We will find our way through things.
And what message, is there anything you'd like to add to those out there in a similar situation?
Wasn't long ago that my husband and myself, we were in a very low place, and it took us a long time to become members, 14 months as applicants, 14 months on top of that as members. So we kind of felt like we were waiting and we were left on the shelf, if you want to put it that way. And a very good friend of mine is surrogate herself. She said to me, trust the process. Trust the process, Danny. And I never really knew what that means, but now I do. Trust the process. Stay strong, get involved. And with SUK, it's the more you put in, the more you get out. I mean, we did throw ourselves head over heels last year in social media and doing online socials. We did that because we wanted to, and because I'm a little bit of a geek and that's fun for me. But get involved, you get out what you put back in, and it's a place full of wonderful people. Give it a go, and we'll all get there. We will.
There we have it. So we have educate yourselves, fill the gaps in your policies, take a leap of faith, find a way, and trust the process. I think that's probably the perfect way to put that. And everybody's nodding along. My guests are all nodding. And I'd like to thank my guests. You guys have been absolutely fantastic. Thank you to Danny, to Torrey, and to Mark for participating. We hope you, the listeners, have enjoyed it as much as we have creating it. And we very much look forward to you joining us again for the 6th episode in our series. Until then, take care. Thanks for listening.